Welcome to Heal and Go Public with Karen Hibner. Picture this. I sit in a large, open, airy, almost breezy warehouse on one of those little gray artist stools at a massive work table. You crack the door open, I turn with a welcoming and knowing smile on my face. I gently but joyfully wave for you to come in, and there's a stool set up for you. I ask you, what do you want to create or recreate today? I've built this studio to be a judgment-free space, a space that you can expand and expand and expand in, a space where you can surprise yourself with what you can build. We are all continually creating ourselves, who we are and how we are. I believe our own creative process is the door to our healing. I believe sharing our creations is often the access point to healing for others. I believe in healing and going public. I'm your creative guide, Karen Hibner. I'm an artist, podcast producer and editor, and former spiritual director. Let's explore what it means to create. Let's wonder at what it means to heal and go public. All right. Thanks everybody for being here. I'm really excited to roll out another artist series episode for all of you. You enjoyed the poetry episode so much, and now we're moving into a little bit more visual art as well today with our guest. Today I have with me a new, but very, I think dear, we're like beginning to get to know each other. We're beginning to like learn each other's businesses and work. We've gotten to get coffee. We're actually local, which is really fun, even though we're on the virtual today. But my friend Cassandra Mitchell is here with us today. She's a photographer extraordinaire. She also has some amazing things upcoming with an education component of her business. But we just really resonated together when we got coffee around being business owners, being creatives, all of the different things that that means as far as the transformation that we can access through having a business, the transformation that we can access through creating, the need to create, kind of all of these different components of the conversation of being a creative business owner and also an artist. So I have Cassandra with me today. Let me read her bio for you and then I'll welcome her on. Cassandra Mitchell is a rural Kentuckian living in Denver, Colorado, and has been working her way around the world for nearly a decade. She turned a hobbyist blog into a sustainable commercial photography business over the course of 7 years without a large social media presence. Her goal is to continue to grow in her industry and help other passionate photographers along the way. So Cass, thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
Thank you. I'm so excited. I'm so excited to chat and to actually have like a recorded conversation with you that's like focused. I know you and I can chat on so many different levels, on so many different things, but I'm really excited to ask some of these questions that get down to like the nitty gritty of like your craft and your art and your business and everything. So Cass, that was a little bit about you in a formal way and your bio, but can you tell us a little bit about you as far as like you, your work, your art, like what does that look like? Just introduce us to you.
What does it look like? Okay. Well, I stress so heavily that I'm a rural Kentuckian because rural Kentuckians are rarely painted in a good light. And I'm not here to say like I'm a shining star out of Kentucky by any means. But, you know, I do want people to realize like we're not all the stereotypical version of what you may be thinking. Those things do exist. But, you know, it's important to me that people realize like Kentuckians do get out in the world and do things. That's important for me to stress. It also helps me to connect with other rural Americans because again, none of us are really painted in the best light. Mm-hmm. Also, this is not my natural accent. I have a thick Kentucky accent. And like if I'm around other Kentuckians or other like Southerners, it's going to come out very, very heavily, but it's been diluted a little bit over the years.
Sure.
So anyway, this is my fake accent.
This is my front-facing accent.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, honestly, I'm just kind of a silly goose. I've just been figuring out how to work my way around the world for a long time. Mm. I remember when I graduated high school and even college, like I never thought of myself as a smart person ever. Mm. Like am a first-gen college graduate on my dad's side. My mom has her doctorate, but I take a lot of pride in my very humble beginnings.
Mm.
And it's just, I think it's important to represent other people with similar backgrounds. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I stress those things. And I just like to really talk about a gritty work ethic and putting yourself out there, even if you're quirky and weird. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like my online presence is really like confident and just like bold and energetic. And in reality, like, I'm introverted and I'm quirky and I'm weird mm-hmm. and I trip up on my words a lot. And you can be all of these things, you know? Mm-hmm. You can be all of these things. So, yeah, that's a long ramble about who I am as a person. So
I love it.
I'm just a representation of where I come from and the people that I come from, and also all of the places and the people that I've met over the last decade of traveling extensively. That's me.
I love it. Thank you so much. And I have a couple of kind of thoughts there too, as far as like, one, just on like an anecdote level, when I had a family member that graduated from high school recently, and I gave them a book that was all, I think it's called Altars in the World. And I wrote them a note and just said, like, because I was like, oh, what can I tell a high school graduate that would have like really impacted me? And I was like, honor the stories that everyone tells you by how they give you who they are. And collect them like gems and hold tightly to them, because this is the greatest, like these are the riches that you will have. And mm-hmm. I feel like that's like how you show up. Like that's such a big part of you, your travels and like who you've gotten to meet along the way. Like I feel that too, as far as like, that's how I have been built as a person, is all of the places that I've been and all of the people that I've gotten to meet and all mm-hmm. of those little gems that they've given me along all of my travels have like truly made me who and how I am. So I just resonate with you in that.
Yeah.
Okay. I heard you mention the word humble. I also heard you mention the word confidence. So mm-hmm. we have a common friend that we were getting coffee one day, and she actually told me about your business name and the story behind your brand. Can you tell us just a little bit about the Humble Lion and where that name comes from?
Yes. I could get a little emotional because...
And I'm going to note too that Cass and I had like an emotional conversation right before we jumped on, and I'm in a teary state. I told her I'm in a teary state. So this is where we are today, and we'll cut out whatever we need to cut out.
Yeah, this is true THL form.
Mm.
I'm getting touchy because when I created the Humble Lion name, like I created it in the middle of this season of truly learning what humility is. I had experienced a lot of loss in my family all at once, mm-hmm. like just year after year. And it was brutal. Like it was like from horrific violence. And then it was mm-hmm. from sudden illness and prolonged illness. And then my dad was in a really traumatic logging accident.
Yeah.
So he had a traumatic brain injury. He like broke his back, his neck, all of his ribs on his left side, like collapsed his left lung. So
Right
when I was finishing my last year of college in 2015, right at the beginning of that year, you know, I'm geared up. I'm like feverishly seeking every opportunity I can post-grad. I'm like, I wanted to work internationally so badly, and that was my sole focus. And I was just coming off of a really cool summer working out of state, living with some friends on the coast, just like kind of riding a high. And then my dad had this crazy accident, and you know, these things never come at a good time, but I was working like three jobs. I was in school full time. I had two internships, like, which looking back, I'm like, how was I balancing all of that? And then my dad had this accident that left him in the critical care unit for like 7 weeks.
Wow.
So every weekend, like my family was like, no, you're staying in school. And so my stepmom would take like the weekdays in the hospital, which was like 2 hours away from where we were. And then we would rotate, and I would go be with dad on the weekends.
Wow.
And my dad was just this like strong ox of a man, like 6'3", 240 pounds, just this big, strong guy, a very masculine, like very physical job. And then watching your dad, who's always been this big, playful, like silly man, just learn how to walk again over months, like it took months, I truly learned what humility meant. Because up to that point, I was like, oh, that's just when like people don't recognize how great they are. They downplay their strengths. And it's like, no, humility is understanding just how small you really are in the grand scheme of things, you know? And that's not to diminish all of the wonderful things that we all are and how big of a role we play in our communities and in the world. But at the end of the day, like, it just puts so much into perspective. We'll put it that way. So my dad, you know, continued to heal over the next year. So I did end up landing like the internship of my dreams in the UK. So I left for a media internship a few months after I graduated. It was a big decision. It's like, do I, you know, my dad's still healing. My family's still healing from this and from a lot of loss over the past few years. So like, is this the best time to go? And then right before I went, my uncle, my dad's brother, my dad's only sibling, was diagnosed with a brain tumor that ended up taking his life. And that happened, like, we found out a week before I left. So then it was like, oh my God, do I still go? And this is it was an extremely competitive internship. And the fact that, like, again, I'm the rural Kentuckian, I never like thought I was the smart one. I didn't have the greatest GPA. It was just insane that I actually got this over a few hundred applicants. So it was like, what do we do? You know? So I ended up going on doing this like crazy internship. It was wonderful. I met my partner there. He's not English. He's very much from Southern Indiana. So I was riding this huge high in England, just like, I was doing photography. I was like helping with marketing communications. That was all part of this media internship. And I was also helping like lead students to other countries and take them on trips. It was everything I had dreamed in one internship. And I sought this thing out for a year. I fought for it for a year, but I didn't expect to also just like experience wild depression in the middle of it, because I'm like, I just felt guilty because I just left my family, even though I had their support, but it was just like, I'm not there to be with my grandfather while one of his sons is still recovering from this horrible thing. And he's not the same, you know, it affected his mental state. And then his other son is dying. So like, it weighed on me a lot. So when I did end up coming home after the internship was done, I was like, how do I go from like riding this huge high and having all of these wonderful life-altering experiences and then deal with like my family, my uncle actually passed away while I was overseas as well. So like, I had to deal with like, okay, I had to fly home, go to his life celebration and then fly back and kind of deal with that there. I say deal with that. I had to grieve there while I was also experiencing like the best thing of my life. So I was experiencing the best time of my life and the worst time of my life at once. And that seems impossible, or it sounds like a contradiction, but that's just, I learned at 23 years old, like, oh, this is what life is. Okay.
Wow. Like,
so from like 20 through 23 was just like loss, trauma, but also work and keep pushing forward and keep doing these things. And that was a very just pivotal time, I guess, in my life. So anyway, so I came home after that internship at the very end of 2015. And then I was like, well, what do I do now that I'm back home? Like, I've experienced all these great things. And am I just supposed to like come home and bartend again? Like, what do I do? So I did. I mean, I'm not a person that has the choice not to work. So I was like, okay. So while I figure it out, I'm just going to go back home and bartend and be with my family and try to be supportive and figure out my next move. And then I was like, oh, well, I'll go to grad school, because what else am I going to do?
Right.
I
wanted to
wait. Like, I met my life partner overseas. So we came back, we lived 2 hours apart. We were like, well, we can do the distance thing until you graduate, because he's a year younger than I am. Also fully understanding, like, we're both babies, but we're also both old souls. And like, we know that we travel well together. Like, we want to start our life together.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, well, I need to wait for him to graduate. So what am I going to do in the meantime? So it's like, oh, I'll go to grad school. And actually one of my mentors from my undergrad was like, I asked him to write a letter of recommendation. He's like, why do you want to do this? Like, if you go to grad school, it should be for a reason, like not just to kill time, but he's like, whatever. He said, how about you write the letter and I'll sign it? And I was just like, okay, that's lazy. But in hindsight, it's because he was like, I don't think you're doing the right thing, but I'm not going to tell you no. So And he didn't have the heart to say that. He's like, you have to make this decision on your own. He's like, I know you can handle grad school. It's just like, I don't think that's the right fit. So fast forward like 6 months and first day of grad school happens. I have a panic attack and I'm like, I don't think I want to do this. And oh my gosh. Austin, my partner, he's like, why do you feel like you have to? I was like, because I said I was going to do it. And I've like signed up for classes and I had, you know, my mentors from undergrad, like write these beautiful things for me to get me into this school. And he's like, okay, is that worth dedicating 2 years and tens of thousands of dollars to something that you don't even need? I was like, so dropped out on the first day. So I'm just like flailing around trying to figure out what my next step is. Because for like 2 years leading up to this, I had set goals. I had completed those goals. And like, I was doing things that 18-year-old me had never thought possible. Or like, again, I never thought I was smart. Like I was always driven and I've always been a workhorse and I've always been involved.
Yeah.
But I was like, you know, I'm not going to be a doctor. I'm not going to be an attorney. Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
So anyway, I started this blog because I was like, when I was overseas, you know, I was writing on Instagram, I was doing the whole Facebook thing and people were really like resonating with what I was writing. And I was like, I never thought I was a strong writer before that.
Yeah.
And real writers would probably be like, you're not. But it was connecting with people, like a lot of people.
Resonating. So
I was like, I was like, okay. I say a lot of people, like a few hundred people per bit. Like, it's not like I've ever had this like famous blog, but people in my community were really enjoying it.
Yeah.
And it was inspiring people from like my rural hometown to go out and do things. And I was like,
wow.
Okay, well then that's all I need. Like, that's all I need. If it, if I have this one girl from my high school that has seen me do these things and she's like, hey, I want to do that too. Like, I want, and then to watch her go do them, I was like, hell yeah. Like, that's enough for me. That's enough to like do this creative outlet. So I started this blog. And I had started writing notes for it. I was like, I don't know what to call it. And because I had like my undergrad is in public relations. So I had a lot of media classes and I was familiar with like starting blogs and the importance of like figure out a good name. The Humble Lion makes no sense. Like, it could be anything. You know, I think it's like there's a cafe in Montreal called The Humble Lion. There's like a band somewhere, which is why I can't just have The Humble Lion handles. It has an underscore under it. Like, but it's so obscure, I guess, or abstract. Mm. But to me, it's like, if anyone's ever seen a photo of me, like I have big hair. People always called it a lion's mane growing up. They're like, look at that lion's mane. But then I started thinking more about it. I'm like, okay, I want to write about my experience going and doing these wonderful things, but also like, I want to be really honest about what I'm dealing with while I'm doing them. And I want to talk about holding both the light and the dark with equal weight, you know?
Yeah.
So it just kind of came to me one night laying in bed. I was like, The Humble Lion. Like, that's weird enough, right? Like, and it's broad enough that I could write about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
So I sent it to my partner and one of my best friends. I was like, what do you think about this one? And they were like, that's it. Like, that's it. And I was like, okay. So yeah, I started this blog and was writing for a little while. And right after I had decided like, okay, I'm not going to do grad school. So I have to figure out my next thing. I had reached out to my boss from the UK had finished her job at the same time that I finished my internship. So that was her last semester there. She got a job in Australia doing marketing communications for a study abroad organization there. So her job, and she was only there, she was doing a 1 year contract. And I knew that like she was halfway through that contract. And my partner was still in school. He had a busy like few months. I was like, I think I want to go to Australia for a few weeks and see if I can find a job there and like see if Chris can help me just figure something out.
Yeah.
And so I went to Australia and I volunteered in her office for a couple of weeks. I did like video editing, like some copywriting, just like little projects on the side. And I volunteered my time to do that. And then a few weeks later, when they posted her job, she's like, hey, this job is up for grabs and like you're qualified for it if you want it. So if you want to apply, you should. And I did. And because I had gone and like I met that team, they hired me. Anyway, I landed a job in Australia, like went on to do that, but kept blogging throughout all of that. That's a very long-winded answer to tell you, like, this is how The Humble Lion came to me, but that's the foundation of it. It was just, it was a passion project. It was about writing and connecting with other people and creating cool content and taking photos, because that's been like my biggest passion since I was a kid. So,
oh, I love it. Thank you. Thank you for all of that. And I feel like that's the thing, is that like these names of these things, even when they come about, like, I mean, we like know that they're important when they come about, but then I feel like they just like grow and grow and grow in meaning, or like transform. And that's how I feel too. Like when I talk to friends about like tattoos or anything like that, like, I don't know if you have tattoos. I have tattoos. Their meanings like change like over time, like, and they grow or expand, or they like represent a specific season. But just like following the trail of these names, it's not a quick story and it's not an elevator pitch. It's these things that are, I mean, in a way, and like, I am trying to separate, I'm like doing the work to try to separate myself from my business a little bit. That was like the work of like last year or the year before, right? But they really are these parts of us, these things that we are creating constantly. Absolutely. And that we are able to see ourselves through these lenses in ways that like we can't access otherwise. Mm-hmm. Or in my case, maybe in your case, there's these tools that help us access the us that is so counter to what we've been told that we always have to be, are the boxes that we have to fit in, right? I feel like you probably resonate there a little bit. But to backtrack quite a bit, you have experience in all of these different places because of your media background. Mm-hmm. I mean, you said that you have experience in copywriting, you have experience in, and like with your blog being such a formative piece of you, your business, and where you are now too. I think one thing that, this is the kind of broader piece, and I know that you and I talked about this last time we got coffee too, of just that it's amazing to look back and see how like there are no detours. Like everything that you've done like has a presence in what you're doing now. Mm-hmm. Right. So like even how, like even as I hear you talking, I'm kind of like sorting through my own story at the same time. And I feel like we did this over coffee too, of like, oh my gosh, I have 3 years of a journalism degree. You know, like I don't have a full journalism degree because I quit and went to art school, but I have 3 years of a journalism degree, and I like flashed back to writing these profiles, like writing profiles on people, or writing like all of the reporting work that I had to do, like has an influence in the work that I'm doing now somehow. Those passions of what led me to J school in the first place, like has an influence in what I'm doing now. And it's so easy to compartmentalize it all, but yeah, I feel like you could talk about that a lot, just as far as like everything's connected.
It is. Yeah. And it's so funny that you say you have 3 years of journalism experience. So I wanted to be a photojournalist when I was like 17, 18 years old. That's what I thought I wanted to do. But fortunately, I did have parents that were like, we're not going to pressure you to figure this out. You're going into college as an 18-year-old. Like, you're probably going to change your mind. Why don't you just take your general education classes?
Amazing. And
like, you'll figure it out. And then I got there. I went to one of the top three universities in the U.S. for photojournalism, and I chickened out. I was like, no, well, I chickened out. And also, this is so dumb, but my cousin told me that the PJs at WKU were weird. And I was like, oh. And I just like,
I don't want to be weird. I don't like that. I'm not weird.
Like, oh. And I was like, what does that mean? And yeah, they are weird, but they're also so cool. And literally, it's just such a solid program. I mean, I'm glad that my path ended up being what it was, but I would be lying if I didn't say, like, I haven't looked back and like thought, should I go back and still get that degree one day? Like, should I? But anyway, the average graduate there also graduated in like 6 years, and as an 18-year-old, it's like, no.
No, thanks.
No. It still took me 5 years to just get a PR degree, but that's another story.
Same time. I did five years.
But at that time, at that university, the public relations school was in the School of Broadcasting Journalism. So I took so many media classes. So I took like broadcasting classes. I took like writing for TV. I took just so many different kinds of media classes. And it was so cool. Like the only formal photography class I've ever taken was from a Pulitzer Prize winning photojournalist.
Wow.
And I definitely got a B in that class. But I'm like, also, I was like focused on a boy and working, and even though it was this thing that I loved, it's just my mind wasn't where it should have been.
Isn't it amazing? I look back on that season of life and I'm like, how were we supposed to learn anything? Like, just trying to figure out how to be a human was like
your brain
all
is
of it.
Really formed until you're like what, 26? Yeah,
I'm like, so much education was dumped in me that I'm like, yeah, I'm sure that's coming out in some way. But yes. Also, this is a total side note and flashback to earlier in our conversation, but I am totally that person that got a graduate degree just to buy time, and I am still paying for it. So yeah. Like, you really dodged a bullet on that.
Right.
One.
I'm like, you know what? I'm okay eating that like couple thousand bucks that I didn't
yes.
get from those classes, as opposed to spending an extra 40 grand that I
yes.
would absolutely still be paying off.
Yes. And I mean, so, yeah. Don't hear me wrong. Like, I got 8 years of a wonderful career out of it, and I'm just now pivoting. But like, also, I 100% got a master's degree just to buy time, so I didn't have to put the pressure on my art to make money.
Yes.
Anyway, Cass, tell us like a little bit about, and you're going to hate this because I know that you're not a label lover, but like the other day I was relabeling myself on my bio on Instagram, and it was the most challenging thing ever because it's like artist, digital, like digital creator, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. I referred to you as a photographer.
Yes.
How do you refer to yourself? And do you think of like your work as art? Like, it's like kind of two conversations in one, but like, can you give us a picture as far as like how you label yourself and how you view your creative work?
Yeah. So I do introduce myself as a photographer. I'm almost always met with, oh, do you shoot weddings? I'm like, no, I shoot commercial work. When I started, I didn't even have the vocabulary to call it commercial photography. I was like, I want to work with brands. Like, I have this PR degree. I have this like marketing experience. I love travel and tourism. So I was like, ideally, I would love to work with like hospitality or some, like I want to shoot for businesses. But I just kept saying I want to work with brands. And so this was before people were like, oh, I'm a brand photographer. It was like, I just started saying like, oh, I'm a brand photographer, because I didn't know that a brand photographer is a commercial photographer.
Yeah.
But also I was like too intimidated to just like go after huge international brands. So I'm like, well, I know so many people that are like side hustling with different things. Or also I was 25, I think, when mm-hmm. I started doing this full time. So all my friends were young. They didn't have a lot of money. So it's like, yeah, I just like, I want to work with like small business owners.
Mm.
So I just called it brand photography. And so mm-hmm. I got into it after my job contract in Australia ended. And we chose not to stay in Australia because my husband's career was really taking off and he needed to get back to the US. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, well, there's nothing else I want to do besides photography. And his job is going to keep him traveling, and I want to keep traveling with him. So how do we make this work? And that has always been our goal, to like, let's just build the foundation of our life. Like, let's just figure out how we can do these things that we love so much and do them together. So yeah, I mean, I definitely took on a couple of weddings that first year, and I've like shot engagement sessions and family sessions and literally anything that would bring me money, because when you're just getting started, like, I chose to just dive in after my contract ended. I was like, no, I'm going to make this work because I love photography so much. Mm-hmm. And like the 6 months leading up to that marker, knowing that my job contract would end in a year, I was like just kind of feverishly researching everything I could about photography and building your own brand. And I already had this brand started because I had this blog. So I was like, okay, well, how do I make this thing work after this job ends? And it's like, it wasn't even a question to me of what comes next. Now, what I envisioned probably looked different than what it has turned into, but it's pretty much the same thing. It's just you don't really know what to expect.
Totally.
Yeah, I call myself a photographer, but I just have like a lot of experience with, yeah, building brands, like working closely with brand and web designers. I work mostly with creatives. And then my second niche, oddly enough, is in the fitness industry or wellness industry. But yeah, that's what I do. That's what brings me money. But I am adding a second component to that. And I'm like starting this education journey.
Yeah.
I'm a photographer and I am also a artist. Yes. My art pays my bills, and it's not always the art that like lights me up, but more often than not, it is.
Mm-hmm. And this is, Cass, this is something I feel like I've had to learn so much about, because to bridge my question, I guess, a little bit, I like always identified as artist, even when I was like a small child. I was like, I'm always going to be an artist. Da, 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 da. When I was in college, it got a little bit like, I had to defend myself from like certain things in order to protect myself. Like I was too afraid to jump out into commercial photography. So mm-hmm. I was very much like, I'm a fine artist. Like yeah. I make art photography. Mm-hmm. And it's like all of these, like sure, having all of those like hard and fast boxes served me for a while. Mm-hmm. Also really hurt me in some ways because like I didn't like, you know, I just like got through my studio lighting classes and like all of that, right? And now I'm like, oh, that's more of what I would like to do. And I really wish that I had like really dived in, but mm-hmm. I couldn't access it at the time, right? So it's like funny that like we can get, and I think it's just from outside sources as far as like culture or whatever, trying to like define and like pin people down or like put people in like silo them off and all of this. Mm-hmm. But like I define, and even through this, like I even asked you at coffee, I was like, can I run this episode under our artist series? Like, are you comfortable with that? And you're like, oh my gosh, yes, of course. And it's more from like my own, like, oh, what does it mean to be artist? What does it mean to be creative? And that everybody defines those things a little bit differently, and getting mm-hmm. more and more confident in how I define it and define it for myself. So mm-hmm. it's been a really big challenge for me as an artist to be like, oh, I do creative work that pays my bills, and it mm-hmm. plays on all of my talents and my skills as an artist. It plays on my ear that I naturally have. Mm-hmm. It plays, you know, like all of these things that have made me artist. And also it maybe isn't like what I would envision as far as like what my fine art is, or like my expression, like where I express myself emotionally or like anything like that. So yeah. Do you want to just give me some thoughts on like the like artist, photographer, creative, like that dance, or like how you see it?
Yeah. Going back to like when I was younger, I never thought that I was smart. And now I just know there are different types of smart. Yes. Because people will still intellectually run circles around me. But if you want to talk like philosophy or just like existentialism, let's fucking go.
Yes.
But yeah, I very much am an artist, but just like I didn't think I was smart, I also didn't think I was creative. Mm. Not really. But then my mom reminds me of certain things that I would do as a kid. And I'm like, oh yeah, I was definitely creative.
Yeah.
But also I just remember, I still deal with this, like imposter syndrome is a huge thing. I deal with like comparing myself to others. We all do. Which is actually why I don't follow a lot of other photographers online. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, nope, I have some that I really love following. I like connecting with other photographers, but I just like to protect my mental peace. So it's not yep. that I don't need to show support to other people. It's just like, it is not good for my mental health or like my artistic health.
Yes.
To constantly be flooded by other people's amazing work. So
yes.
Yeah. So I'm like, if other people don't follow me for the same reason, great. Good mm-hmm. for you for protecting your peace. But yeah, I think it took me a while to consider myself an artist. And even now I still struggle with like, but this person's work, like that's an artist. That's incredible. Like their work is so insane. Mm. How did they have the foresight? Like how can they create this? And then I talked to some other people and they feel similarly about my work. And I'm just like, what? Yep. What are you talking about? So I just never... Yes, I consider myself an artist, but I don't think that I'm this like next level earth shattering artist. So,
which to go back yeah. to the existentialism piece is like how many of those people really exist in the world? And like, yeah. I like love to go there because yeah. there was so much pressure from my culture that like I very much picked up at a very young age that like if you're not a prodigy, you already failed. Like I just like grew up yeah. in a very high performing society. So I love mm-hmm. to, or a very high performing culture. And mm-hmm. so I love to think about like, I mean, how many Van Goghs are there? How many, you know, like how many Picassos are there? How many, and like to really, I don't know, give permission to what it looks like to be a me kind of artist. Like, mm-hmm. and that, you know, we don't all have to be earth shattering because how could we all like,
right. As a creative business owner, there Ooh. Are so many, like most people, most businesses are not mm. world class. They are not top of the food chain, but yes. they still deserve to be served as if they were. Like they yes. still, they still need someone to meet them where they're at. Yeah. They're there to be served too. So, mm. and if everybody's like, thinks that they are the creme de la creme or whatever. I'm probably mispronouncing that, but like,
you got it.
Whatever. If everybody's the best and they think that certain work is beneath them or like, then you're missing out on so much opportunity.
Yes.
So while I am like low key, very competitive.
Yeah.
Not to the point that it makes me an asshole, but that definitely exists. You know, that she's,
I mean, sometimes there. I'm yeah. just kidding. Depends on what we're playing, you know?
Yeah. But it's like, I don't know. I don't need to flex on the photographers around me.
No.
I just want to serve my people well. Like,
yeah.
I want to be like a racehorse. I want to have my little blinders on. Mm-hmm. I see where I'm going. I'm going to serve the people that I need to serve. I'm going to put mm-hmm. my work out there. And that's going to be good enough for someone.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. This is kind of funny. You might appreciate this, but not to be triggering. But when I was in very religious circles, also, I feel like a phrase that I gleaned out of some of those spaces was that there's no competition in the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Very religious, but I still hold that with me as far as like a much broader kind of understanding mm-hmm. of it now, as far as like, there's no competition in community. Right. Like we are all doing this together. And like, mm-hmm. I think that that's such a foundation. I hear so many things in what's led you to this education component that you're mm-hmm. like moving into now also, as far as coming from where you come from and wanting to make access possible, wanting people to see that they can kind of do these things that they've been wanting to do always and that they can make it happen. And then also that there's not competition. If you can equip other photographers with these skills, with this knowledge, with like all of this stuff, better for the industry, better for you personally yeah. also, yeah. because like, I know that you've told me like even how other people are pricing their stuff impacts how you are able to price your stuff in the conversations that you have around it too.
Absolutely.
And yeah. like all of those things, right? So like we are impacting by helping other people within our industries be better skilled and be better equipped with these things. We are helping ourselves, which is not the primary focus, but we're all like, we can all more actualize ourselves and our desires and our dreams. And that's just a better world. Like,
yeah, it really is. It really is. All of this is not to say that I don't think competition's a good thing. I do think that there is a healthy amount of competition.
Yes. It's like an ecosystem. Like it all, like I like looking at things in that picture too, as far as like, it's an ecosystem. There's top of the food chain, there's bottom of the food chain. There's like all of these different things. Right. But like that it is a community and it is an ecosystem and it's not a utopia by any means, but like, yeah. Anyhow.
It just boils down to how you are treating those people that you are in competition with.
Yes.
Like if they beat you, can you be a good sport about it? Or are you
yes.
gonna be a sport? And then when
it's
you
like,
win,
yeah, playing a game at family game night. Like, is the table going to be like, are you going to leave the table being like hysterical because like you're losing or like,
yeah,
you know,
it's just like, what is your character, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if you beat someone in whatever the competition is, are you going to turn around and shake their hand after, or are you going to be a jerk about it?
Yeah.
Or, you know, like what's the end goal here? Because mm-hmm. I don't know, some of the most successful people in the world, if they're jerks, it's like, mm-hmm. cool, bro, you got all the money in the world, but like, I don't want to be around you. So mm-hmm. have fun. I do believe in community over competition.
Yes.
But I do think competition makes all of us better.
All of us better. I totally agree. This show is brought to you by my podcast editing business. Do what you came here to do, which probably wasn't podcast editing. Sharing your particular magic by going public through podcasting helps others sink into their own special kind of magic. Then we all heal this world together. We need your voice. We need your story and what you have to offer this world. I work with coaches, activists, spiritual directors, therapists, authors, and all kinds of creatives to help them get their particular wonderful out to the world. Through podcasting, my clients are able to give freely some of their greatest offerings in order to grow their audience, land more clients, and nurture those clients. My clients' audiences get to know them, get to feel what it's like to work with them, and build an actual connection and relationship. Y'all, voices are amazing. By waiting on your files, I help keep you accountable to creating powerful content for your audience. I help you to continue nurture your audience and care for the people in your orbit. Also, let's be real, by creating this regular content, you're getting way more hands-on and keeping the pulse of your business and your audience. Side note, content that we can then repurpose for all your other platforms you feel like you have to be on. If you've been editing yourself, I save you massive amounts of time and allow you to speak freely. No more worrying or stressing while you're recording about having to go back and edit it or starting over or having to pause or having to stop and edit your thoughts while you're talking. By refining your recordings and beautifully packaging them, I help you deliver high quality, high value content to your audience and current and future clients that changes who and how they are, which changes the world. Schedule a free 1-hour discovery call with me today. I'll help you define your goals and intentions for your show, your greatest challenges, and your greatest wins in the space, and how to continue creating a show that is in perfect alignment with who and how you are. I also offer consult calls and podcast strategy packages. Get on my schedule for your free discovery call today at karenhibner.com or through the link in the show notes. Now let's get back to it. Cass, I want to ask you this as far as like, okay, everybody, if you're listening and you can and you're not in the car driving, go to the show notes, look at Cass's Instagram and just kind of scroll a little bit, and especially look for images of like some self-portraits of Cass, because this is like going to be helpful for this question. Don't get nervous. More so just that, like, I mean, we talked about this a little bit with the name of your brand, with the Humble Lion, as far as this confidence. And I know from reading your website, I know from talking to you that this is something that's so important to you as far as working with badass brands. You want to help them portray just this like badassness, this confidence, this power. I hear this too, and how you're talking about what you would love to allow folks where you're from to see what's possible, like all of that. When I see pictures of you, like I don't think of the woman, and this is just this is just conditioning, right, from culture. But like, I don't think of the, like when you're trying to figure out what to name your blog, like all of the ins and outs are like the questioning or the like introversion or the like all of that, right? The doubt, you said imposter syndrome comes in, which of course you're a woman in the culture of the United States. Which is, I think, where imposter syndrome comes from, because we're actually told that we can't be in these spaces. Hot topic. But you are so driven. And I hear and can see that that could probably come from family. That probably comes from like some of what you received there as far as like this idea of competition, this like hunter, this, I mean, your dad being a logger, like it comes with your work ethic. It comes with all of that. But we can hold, it's hard to hold those things at the same time as far as this confidence, this drivenness, you seeing what's possible. You being able to be like, I want to go to Australia. I'm going to figure out how to go to Australia, with also this like imposter syndrome and questioning and doubt and all of that too. Right. So I think my question is around like, where did your drive come from and how do you continue to access that as far as what's possible for you?
That's something that I think is nature versus nurture. And I do think there's a component of that that's just naturally innate in me. Like there is no other option. Not that I don't know how to relax or chill or be lazy or what, however you want to define that. Yeah. So I grew up in the Bible Belt in rural Kentucky, and that played a huge role in my life. That said, I did not grow up in a family that met the standards of most Bible thumpers. So growing up, I was born in 92. Things were a little different. My parents were never married. So growing up in a community that is very religious, my parents never even dated. I was like a very big surprise.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of judgment around that. There was a lot of shame on both of their parts, but mostly my mom.
Yeah.
And so single mom of three, putting herself through school, working three jobs. Like I say this out loud, I've never given this much thought, but like she, yeah, that's my mom. That's my North Star. Like I've only ever seen her work really hard and continue pushing herself. She was in school. She was a teacher and putting herself through school basically my entire life because she could only take one class at a time. She had three kids to feed. Seeing her always push herself has just had a really profound impact on me, I think. And I haven't given it that much thought, but like it is incredible. And I love my mother, but I get my spaciness and some irritating qualities from my mother. So like I've always been really hard on her, but also like she has been able to do all of these things despite her ADHD.
Yeah.
I come from this area where, like, again, I didn't grow up with money. I grew up in a very poor community, to be quite honest. My parents were workhorses. Everyone in my family, just, they worked their tails off. So it's just a part of the culture. But also pair that with, like, kind of being the underdog. Like, I came from this non-traditional background. There was a lot of judgment there. People that were very involved with the church and thought that they were on the straight and narrow path, and they were doing things, in quotes, like, the right way. They looked down on my mom, and I think they just didn't think that I stood much of a chance. I have very specific examples, so if anybody wants to come at me, let's go. But yeah, just kind of like a, oh, poor you, or like, my friend's parents were always really nosy and wanted to know about, like, my parents' situation, or like, my mom's relationship with my stepdad, or things that were none of their business. And so I just, and, you know, I was far from the valedictorian. I was, like, again, I was always, like, really involved with school and sports and clubs and all these other things. But again, kind of, like, socioeconomically an underdog. So I think I've just always had this fuck you fire, honestly. No, I'll show you. Like, So, and that's not to say, like, I didn't have a lot of friends or whatever. Like, I had a very loving community. There was just also a lot of judgment. So if you were raised in the Bible, well, I'm pretty sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Totally.
So honestly, I look back at that and I'm just like, nope. Like, I still ended up in a spot that I'd much rather be in. I wouldn't trade my path or my background for anything. That's probably what has played the biggest role for me in my life, is just being like, no, I'll show you.
Yeah, absolutely. That totally makes sense. And I hear too, like, just to, for my own understanding, to, like, synthesize too, as far as, like, what I'm understanding is that you were othered enough that you had to create your own possibility. And that the fire and the drive came from, like, I'll show you. And I bet that that still fuels you to some extent. And also with actually getting to realize a lot of what you've wanted to do and you've set out to do, that that becomes a different fuel source also. Actualizing possibility, like, oh my God, I'm going to tear up thinking about it. But, like, can you tell me a little bit about, like, that fuel source too? Like, you've actualized a lot of your possibility. So how does that change the dialogue of what's possible for you? And even at, if that's through the lens of, like, the education component that you're releasing now, that could even be metaphor or, like, microcosm for this, because, like, you saw something that you would like to do and you are fucking doing it. Like, you know, like, how does somebody go from, like, oh, that's something I'd really like to do, to, like, doing it?
I think in my head, there's just never been another option. Like, my stepmom always teases my dad and says, like, oh, if he doesn't want to do it, he's not going to do it. But if it's something he wants to do, like, he will go to the end of the earth to make it happen. And I have that in me too. It's like, if it's a 3-minute task that I'm dreading, I will put it off for weeks. And it's so silly. But if it's literally figuring out a way to handle all of the logistics of, like, let's elope and move across the world and start jobs. It's like, I'm going to figure out a way to do that. So, and I don't care if it's going to take me 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to figure this out. Like, there is no other option. That's just what's going to happen.
Amazing.
And I don't think I understood that that's kind of entrepreneurial. Until I heard my husband's grandmother, like, one of the first times I ever had dinner with them or just went to hang out with them, it was really sweet. She was talking about my now husband, and she was talking about his entrepreneurial spirit from the time that he was, like, a teenager. And I just thought that was so hot. I was like, wow, it's so cool. But it was so sweet and endearing that she was saying these things, and I had never heard that. Like, and over the years, like, he is truly, he has shown me so much of what is possible if you just stop telling yourself these narratives, or if you put your goals ahead of your fears of what, how your family's going to react or your friends, because that's actually held me back a lot. And honestly, if I weren't with my partner, I probably would have allowed a dedication or a sense of duty to my family to put what I've done on the back burner. I came so close to that so many times, but I had fortunately, like, mentors and family members that were saying, like, no, you know, you still have to live your life. You can't let this just define you or cripple you or hold you back. So yeah, I think it's just a part of who I am. And as opposed to giving myself excuses of like why something's going to be too hard or, you know, all of the reasons it won't work out, it's just like, those things aren't even truly the option. It's just like, no, I'm going to figure out how to make this work. And you can call that manifestation. You can call that whatever you want. I don't know, but I think it's just truly a part of who I am.
But that's something, I mean, like I remember one of my coaches would always say like, everything's figure outable. And that was like life-changing for me. Like, it sounds like you kind of baked that in like somehow, like out, maybe out of just like your circumstances or whatever, like you had to figure it out. That's the way it was going to happen. Yeah. But like, I just really admire that. And that's something that I'm working for every day, but I do appreciate, and you and I could probably do an entire episode on this as far as what you mentioned of putting the goals before, and this people will have a lot of opinions on this, but putting the goals before like sometimes family needs or what family says that who you are and what you should be or where you should live. That's a bit, you know, like that's something from my past or like anything like that. And that's something that honestly, like I'm really waking up to on a much deeper level, even in the last year of what I get to say that I am and how I get to show up in the world and what I get to be and what I get to do with this life. Versus what I've been prescribed from not only a familial lens, but from culture, from past mentors, from professors, from degrees, from like all of those things, right? I have all of this kind of like conglomeration of things that now I get to choose what I'm doing and where I'm going. And that sounds like, that can sound like very developmentally shunted. Come at me. I don't care. But also like, this is my 30s. Like, you know, like this is where we are and this is what we're doing. So.
And just because that's what we're choosing to do does not make, like if someone hears that and they feel triggered, that's not to say that their decision to put family first and put that familial duty first, that does not diminish their decision to do that. So one thing I wish for people is like, when you feel triggered, when you hear something or read something, no one is telling you that your choices are the wrong ones. Like they're only speaking about their experience. Unless they're specifically saying out loud that people are idiots or like, you're an idiot for doing that. Like screw those people, you know, like whatever.
Yeah.
If you do give up your hopes and your dreams in order to try to make someone else's life better, they still have a responsibility to make their own life better or do what it takes. And the only thing I can control in my life is myself and what I'm doing with my life. Yes. And I'm doing so much more with my life because I'm living it to the fullest and the, like the only way that comes naturally to me and that feels right in my bones.
Yeah. Somebody needs to hear it. And what I hear too, is that you've had to do so much work on boundaries. I have also, and I know that boundaries is like such a hot, like little word right now. And also like, it's for a reason. Like we're all learning so much about this and what this looks like. And we're coming into a new phase of culture in the United States, as far as what family looks like. And like all, I just have a lot of thoughts and like wonderings there as far as like where we're going and what this looks like. But I'm going to build a little bridge. You can take it. I mean, hopefully you can take it with me. This may feel like a reach, but in all of that, I think of honestly, because I'm flipping back to when you said like photography, it sounds like photography has been a constant for you. You've always loved photography. Yeah. And so as you're saying like what it looks like to be with family, the boxes that you've been put in, like the things that you have to wrestle with when you're around family, like all of that. Honestly, I flip back to like my 16-year-old self wandering around my neighborhood with the camera. It was a way that I got out of my house. It was a way that I could hone in the deepest depression of my life. I was able to hone in on beautiful things through the lens. I was able to look at light and follow light while also wondering at shadows and dark and contrast and all of that. So I'm wondering if photography was a tool and a coping or like some kind of mechanism for you in like a lot of that kind of familial processing.
Maybe. And I probably didn't realize it.
Yeah. Or wherever you want to take it. Cause I don't want to project. I just told you a little bit of my story, but I know the power of photography to rip us out of like where we are or to process where we are.
Yes. And I think a lot of things can do that, right? Like any art form, music is transcendental. Yes. I certainly like, I was the kid my senior year that was like on yearbook staff and just had the camera everywhere. Like, I loved it. That, and again, I wanted to go into photojournalism after that, and then I chickened out. But it's so funny. I'm also historically just terrible about like going on a trip and not taking my camera because I want to be more in the moment or more present.
Oh my God, you and I could talk about this forever.
And I'm like, dear, I should have brought my camera. This is so silly. This is dumb.
This makes me so happy.
Yeah. So I'm also avoidant with it at the same time. It's really silly. Yes. In certain times, it probably has helped heal me and helped me focus on different things. But I almost get that more from looking at other people's photography.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like, I am so inspired by other creatives' work, especially travel photographers or like landscape photographers. Light me up, dude. Like,
yes.
Yes. Or just observing other people's portraiture, you know, like, is it overly produced or is it just documented? Like, so that honestly lights me up more than like taking my own photos.
Yes.
However, being able to see both the light and the dark, and I resonate so heavily with you saying that because my specific style, especially the type of photography that I am fucking best at, like in my world, I'm not the best photographer for this, but my best work is really dark with a little bit of light.
Yes.
And I love it. And that's just where, I shine. I don't know. And it's because it's like, I used to think I was optimistic and now I think I'm probably more pessimistic, which I don't love, but I'm just trying to be honest about it.
Hi, but, I'm with you too. That's me.
I'm like, old depressy girl. What do you want from me? I don't want to hold me back. Like, whatever. But yeah. And this is something that it's actually been really touching when other people notice this. It was actually my friend Steph. She lives in Philadelphia. I hope she listens to this. I feel like she will. She said this to me when she's like, I see so much of who you are in your work. Like, you see the light in the dark.
Yes.
And I think we were like sitting around a fire in her backyard and I'm pretty sure it made me
cry.
Did
you just sob? Yes.
I was like, I feel so seen. And like, I didn't even know that about myself. Like, someone had to tell me that about myself.
Mm.
You know? And then I'm like, no, that's so true. Like, I am the person that sees that. I resonate so heavily with that. The light and the dark. More specifically, the dark with a little light in it. But like, so I don't know that it probably has been healing. That's just not like front of mind for me.
Of course.
But the balance of those two things is representative in my work. And if you actually go through and thumb through my work a little bit, you're going to be like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, duh. That's here. Yes.
Oh, I get it. She's dark.
Yes. Yes. I love it.
Yeah.
I also love too that you say that like it probably has been healing, but it's maybe not top of mind. And I feel like that's like it's almost flawed that that's the nature of my conversations here in this space as far as like how is our creative process accessing healing for us, because our creative process is where we go that the work is just done. Mm-hmm. It's not always cognitive. Like we can go do CBT, we can go do talk therapy, we can go do whatever that is, like those like cognitive processing spaces. But when we're working, it's often the spaces where we're just looking at the themes that we're really interested in, and those themes are somehow healing us in the background or affirming us. Or like even this morning, my husband and I were chatting on just the last couple of weeks and some things that have like really come to the surface for me. And he was talking about, he's a therapist. He's also on a journey around secular Buddhism and Zen Buddhism and some of these things. And so we were just talking about access to grief and that the ways that we're able to access it is not head on. Like it's, you know, like I've recognized it through this conversation. I was like, oh, I've been accessing grief the last few days. And you know how I've been doing it? I've been doing all of the fucking laundry in the house. Yeah. I have been in the garden every day, harvesting everything that looks even remotely ripe. I ripped a whole bunch of stuff out yesterday so we could get a winter harvest, like winter stuff in the ground. Yeah. And then finally today I was like, why am I exhausted and feel like I need to process everything in my house? And I was like, oh,
Yeah.
That's what's happening. So like to also acknowledge like, yes, we are healing through these modalities and through all of these things. And it's not always cognitive and it's not always head on, because if we approach something like absolutely directly head on, we're never going to get it, right? Like to like kind of let these things stew and just be and live with and be okay with that and not jump right into that kind of colonial white savior oppressor like space of like hitting it right in the face and trying to fix it.
Right.
Yeah.
I feel like, are we synced up in our cycles? We might be. Also a lot of what we did.
Probably.
I am in a season of a fear that grief could be around the corner.
Yes. Oh, friend. Yes.
Yeah. So, but anyway, to go back to kind of the beginning of the conversation, you were asking me about the humble lion, and I got emotional talking about the beginning of it. So, and you have been subtly plugging my education stuff this whole time, and I've dodged it, not intentionally, but I have. So thank you for trying to bring that up. But I got emotional because talking about the beginning of the humble lion and like how it even came to be was like this, the birth of my life, like as an adult was really, it was happening and it was beautiful. And there was also this huge weight in these things happening back to back that were intense and dark and sad and just life. It just is what it is. Yeah. And these things were happening simultaneously. And here I am kind of about to release this new education side of things into the world, which honestly, I did not expect it to be as full on as it's been. That if anybody needs to talk to me about the reality of what that looks like,
oh, like rolling out an entire new like series of offerings and like,
oh my gosh. Yeah. And making sure that it is affordable and attainable and like, it's actually helping people. It's not just like, it's not meant to make me rich, you know?
Yes.
Because it's important to note, I am not financially driven at all, almost to a fault. But anyway, I'm like about to send off this new thing in the world. And at the same time, again, I have a very real life situation happening with one of my parents.
Yeah.
That, you know, they could lose their life and I really hope they don't. But both of these things happening at once. So it's like the confidence and the humility, like the confidence that these are good products that are about to come off the table. And they are going to help people. And I'm going to offer them at an affordable rate while also being fair to myself and fair to the people that help me create these things.
Yes.
So there's this wonderful thing that's happening. And then I'm also like, it's happening at the exact same time that a very messy, big, heavy life event that reminds me of the humility and just like the how precious life is. Mm-hmm. It's all happening at once. And it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So anyway, all that to say.
And that's who we are as business owners. That we don't just come to the business with like, it's not in a vacuum. It lives its own life alongside of our actual life. And it's so intertwined and it is, I mean, oh my goodness, everything is light and dark.
Yes.
And that's something that I have to grieve in and of itself.
Mm-hmm. But it's kind of wild. I do feel like a lot of your listeners have worked with deconstruction and all of these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did. I grew up in the church and I am not the person that's going to completely like shit all over the idea of religion. Like I'm not going to. I think there are a lot of beautiful aspects of it, but with any powerful system, there's going to be corruption. And I fully acknowledge that as well. But there are so many beautiful things about any religion. You know, there are these lessons. And when I come right down to it, my partner blew my mind when I was like 23. I was like, oh, I'm going to marry you. This is why.
Mm-hmm.
He just said, I think all religion honestly came from the same place. And over time, it's been like a giant game of telephone with kindergartners. And it's just been told in a different way. And we argue over like the semantics of it.
Yeah.
But when it all boils down, like the messaging truly is just like, love one another, be there with one another, whatever. That's a big tangent for me to say.
Yeah.
Growing up in the church, I have done a lot of deconstruction. I had a huge falling out with my church. There's actually a blog post about that. It's the only one that's gone like semi-viral. Mm-hmm. So if anybody wants to check that out, I have never taken it down. I have never edited it. Like, it's still on there from 2017 when I decided to finally dish out my issues with my church.
Yeah.
But all of that to say, there were so many beautiful lessons that came from my church life and mm-hmm. from these seasons with my family and how my mother raised me. People didn't see her as like a good Christian because of how I came into the world. She always showed God's love, you know?
Yeah.
And her thing, she would always say like, if you're going to do anything good, like the devil's going to try to get you, like you're going to experience friction. And that language could look different to different people. It looks different for me now, but energetically that is so on point. Like,
yes.
When you're trying to do something really good, you're going to experience friction. You're going to experience some kind of tumultuous, not backlash, but just you're gonna hit a wall.
Yes.
Someone or something is gonna be fighting with you along the way.
Yes.
It's just like your choice if you keep pushing and you choose to keep going, or if you choose to let that other thing win.
Yeah.
But it's just funny that both of these things are coming from a place of like, I am pushing forward and these wonderful things are happening, but you know, I got that devil on my back trying to like push me back into whatever.
Yeah.
I hope that resonates with someone.
Yeah. Oh, I'm certain it will. And just this, and that's not something that's far from all of the conversations that I've had with people in this space and in other spaces, my former one-on-one space with folks is this kind of this both and, this friction of life, energetics. I have a friend that told me to one day recently, because this is so close to business owners, but the energetic cost of innovation.
Oh my gosh.
And like, that's like on a personal level, like I am exhausted all of the time, but it's also on just like a broader energetic level also, is that like how much we have to push through to actually just innovate, to create something new. And that's in the artistic process, that's in the business process, that's in everything, right? And that's so much of like dealing with all of our own stuff too, which this isn't even something I asked you about, so we got to talk about this next time. But like dealing with all of my own stuff to be public, there's a friction that comes with even being public about your business, your work, your all of those things. But Cass, my goodness, I am so grateful for this conversation. And let's move into this for a second. But you've alluded to your education piece. I would love for people to hear about what that looks like, for you to actually describe like what that looks like, what your offerings are, and then also how people can work with you if they desire to work with you as far as in the future with photo work or whatever that looks like. What do you want to tell us about and how can we work with you?
Well, I'll tell you how you can work with me, and then I'll tell you about this thing that I've been working on. So I'm a photographer first and foremost. Like, that's one thing. I am creating this educational piece, but I am not the person that's going to abandon their craft in order to dive into like the business coaching space. No. So anyway, if you want to hire me for photography, I love it. I love connecting with people that way. More often than not, I end up like creating these beautiful friendships out of my work or because of my work. So we could talk about how to work together in that way. Or if someone listening to this is a photographer or wants to become a photographer, or honestly is just another business owner that like doesn't know how to take the next step in something or needs help from a, like a PR standpoint or a media standpoint.
Yeah.
And they just have trouble like connecting some dots. I do offer consultations. I offer one-to-one mentoring with other photographers or creative consultations with other creative business owners.
Mm-hmm.
Or so this new component of my business, it's called THL Education. And it's just another little baby branch of my existing business, but it's meant to be a very high quality education site that is attainable for anybody who doesn't have a large budget. I don't need seven figures. I need people to understand the business side of what they're doing, to honor themselves and to honor our industry. And I want people, if they have one specific question, I want them to be able to go to my website and find something that's going to help them. Like, okay. So my first thing, because I'm feeling so passionate about it right now, I was like, okay, I want to build a pricing and licensing course for other brand photographers, because people are out here, like, they don't even realize that it's not just that they're not making money off of this shoot. They are undercharging to a point where they are actually paying to do this work because they have to pay for their overhead. And then they're like, oh, well, this just isn't sustainable. And it's like, no, no, you just haven't done your homework to understand the business of photography. That's it. Mm-hmm. And then other people are like, yeah, but people are going to learn about your creative process. They're going to want to learn about like that stuff. I'm like, yeah, that's coming. But also if people want to do this to make a living, they understand how to do this to make a living. And they need to understand, like, people are undercharging on a mass scale right now. And they're people don't even realize that as a photographer, you are the owner of your copyright. Like, all of the images you produce, you're the copyright owner. Just because someone hires you to create those images doesn't mean that they own those images.
I literally had like one professional development course in my entire art degree, and we like basically talked about how to do taxes the whole time, but we still didn't learn how to do taxes. So I know, right? I have a CPA,
but for the other people, like, hire an accountant. Yes. You just save more than you think you should for taxes, and then
Then you're good. Yes. But no, all of this knowledge is so needed and so valuable. And I literally have a BFA in fine art photography, and I don't know about this stuff. So say and affirm, like, this is so valuable.
Yes. And even I kind of made a silly mistake. I didn't understand that I was making a mistake, but I hired a business consultant who was brilliant and wonderful to work with and like was very helpful in certain situations, but it was silly of me to hire someone who does not understand the photography industry.
Yeah.
Part of that project was helping me create my rates figure out a different way to like pitch my rates.
Yeah.
I should have just paid for a 2-hour consultation or a 1-hour consultation with another commercial photographer.
With a photographer.
What is fair? But instead I went to somebody who I'm like, what do you think is fair? Because I know you pay for high quality photography. Come to find their photographer is also undercharging because that's not where she makes the bulk of her income. Like, she doesn't have to survive off of photography. So she's also not charging what she could and probably should be charging.
Right.
But this person who's helping me create my prices, like, she expects that that's just what is fair.
Mm-hmm. Licensing is like a whole...
It's a whole other beast.
It's a whole nother thing. And like...
It's a whole thing. Also, licensing is negotiable. Like...
Right.
And, oh my gosh, to license one single image, the value there and the worth is so much higher than most people would expect.
Cass, where can people find you to stay up to date with what you're doing and see your stunning work?
Yeah. So go to thehumblelion.co, not .com. You'll see a lot of my portfolio there. And then you can find my Instagram through there, but it's just thehumblelion_. Because again, didn't snag the original.
There are others. And those links will be in the show notes also. So it'll be easy to find.
Cool. And then the new stuff is thleducation.co.
Beautiful. Yeah. Amazing. Thank you.
I have a semi-regular newsletter that I send out.
Yes.
It does kind of honor my original love of writing, which is how all of this came to be.
Yes.
But yeah, I love a newsletter. I promise I make them not suck. They're not like a really promotional, you know, they're more storytelling. And it's like at the bottom, it's like, here's what's going on if you want to hear about it. I also really like sharing about my creative community. So I'm going to share about you.
You're amazing.
Yeah. I always try to highlight like one or two people in my community and what they're doing just to help promote in a really natural way.
I love it.
That's what life is all about.
Absolutely. Because we're all doing this together and trying to figure out what we're doing here. I love it. Amazing. And then do you still have presets available, or are your presets available right now?
I do have presets. They, hopefully by the time this comes out, they will be up on my website. I'm working on new ones. So I took the originals down, but now I'm like, presets take a while, man, to make sure that they're good and worth selling.
I believe it.
So I'm probably going to put the original pack back up until the others are finally finished. But
perfect.
Yeah, I've got presets, I've got questionnaires, I've got templates, like Canva templates that are very easy to use. I have contracts that are actually like an attorney created these commercial photography contracts.
I love it. Cass, thank you so much for being here. You've shared so much of your story with us and your journey and what it looks like. I know that it'll be advantageous and helpful and inspiring to other folks that are also on this creative journey and this business journey or whatever it looks like, that we're all out here trying the best that we can to make the lives that we envision for ourselves and to also hopefully make this planet a better place along the way also. And I just see that so much in the work that you're doing and the way that you show yourself and your story. And I'm so grateful. You said before we started talking that you're an open book. You absolutely are. And it's such an offering to everyone else. So thank you so much for being here with us today. And thank you for sharing your story with us and your art. Thank you for, I can't wait to go look. And I hope that everybody else does as well. So get in there, people.
Thank you so much for having me. It's seriously an honor.
Ah, you're such a gift. Hey creator, I'm glad you're here. Healing through creating and going public with our wild and wonderful creations is challenging, but I'm here for you and I'm totally with you. In a sense, I am you. Head over to the website at karenhinmer.com or the show notes to get on the email list. By being on my email list, you receive more from me all about healing through creating and connecting through going public. And you get to follow along and allow me to be your creative guide on how I heal and go public as a creator. Join me. Head to karinhubner.com. That's CARINHUEBNER.com. Or head to the show notes to get on that email list. Thanks for listening. And don't forget, hit that rate and review button while you're here. I would love your feedback. And it helps other people find the show so that they can feel like they have a creative guide on this healing and go public journey. Thanks for being here. Bye.